Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody may be able to join us later today. For all your gold and silver needs, she's at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, at least I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day for Thursday, February 1. Oh, my gosh. I had a hard time reading that. hey, happy Optimist Day. Yes, the first Thursday in February. Recognize optimists whose outlooks and endeavors tend to make a big difference in our communities. Optimists are people who look to the future with hope. Optimist Day recognizes the volunteers and youth who support their communities through leadership, scholarship, wellness, arts, and sports. Years ago, I attended a seminar on positive thinking led by a team from Dale Carnegie, cheerleaders. They encouraged us to start each and every morning with this mantra. I still do it every now and then when I remember, which isn't that often, but let's start today's program with it. You can do the same from wherever you are. It goes just like this, short and simple. Today's going to be a great day, and tomorrow will be even better. How about that? Today's going to be a great day, and tomorrow will be even better. I'd say we're off and running. Hey, let's get to today's market report. A good day in some of the precious metal market. Gold up almost $16 at 2056 in the New York spot market. Silver up a little over a percent, a quarter, $23.25. Platinum actually down $6 at $922. Palladium down about $9 at $995. Now, in the other markets, bear with me here. I just lost my page. Let's just start with the paper markets. Big day in U.S. stocks, anyway. Dow Jones up about a percent, 370 points to close at 38,520, little round two. NASDAQ up 1.25%, but roughly 200 points, about 15,362. And the broader S&P 500 up 1.25%, 61 points to close at 4,906. Now, in the Treasury markets, we had the bellwether 10-year yield down we'll call it 0.1, to close at 3.86%. Two-year yield still inverted somewhat. That was down 0.03 points to yield 4.2. In other commodities, we have West Texas Intermediate oil, domestic oil, down about a little over $2 today, closing at $73.83. Natural gas down another 3% today, close at $2.04 a cubic foot. Gold futures, I think those are March futures now, up to 2073. And the dollar index, that fell today. The U.S. dollar index fell about 0.2 of a point. That's at 103.08. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Here's an article I titled, J. Powell, the Buzzkill. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said yesterday that the Fed would likely not be comfortable enough with the path of inflation by its next meeting in March to start cutting interest rates then. At his post-meeting press conference, Powell said, "Based on the meeting today, I don't think it's likely the committee will reach a level of confidence by the time of the March meeting to identify March as the time to do that." But, he continued, "that remains to be seen." Now, the statement came after the Fed's January Federal Open Market Committee meeting, where it left the benchmark Fed funds rate unchanged in a range of 5.25% to 5.5%. Powell did say earlier in his news conference that rate cuts would likely begin at some point this year. Now, right after his comments, actually during his comments, the Dow Jones lost 300 points at one point, and the S&P closed down 1.6% yesterday. It was the market's worst day, in fact, since September. The Fed's policy statement released earlier yesterday included several tweaks that suggested it was taking further rate hikes off the table, but just wasn't ready yet to start cutting. Powell's comments appeared to clarify for investors that the position would continue for at least one more meeting. Now, we have Comerica Bank's chief economist Bill Adams, who reminds us that the Fed was badly burned in late 21 and 22 when they thought high inflation would be transitory. Then they got caught by surprise when it was higher and more persistent than they expected. Thus, they want to avoid making the same mistake twice. So, he added, the Fed will wait to pull the trigger on rate cuts until they see the whites of 2% inflation eyes. Powell also declined to commit to a series of rate cuts once the Fed makes its first move, saying that would depend on the data. The Fed's next two policy decision dates are March 20th and May 1st. In recent months, as we've talked about several times, traders and Wall Street strategists have focused on those two meetings as the most likely candidates for the Fed's first rate cut in this cycle, as inflation continues to fall and job growth slows, well, at least until we see tomorrow's federal government jobs report. As of late morning in New York today, Fed Fund futures traders see a 44% probability of a rate cut now in March, way, way down. I think it was in the 90s at the end of last year. While they still do see a 96% chance of at least a 25 basis point cut in May. Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the personal consumption expenditures price index is updated near the end of each month. There will likely be one more PCE reading before the March meeting, but three more before May. Of course, again, there'll be three more federal job reports released before the May meeting, with the January report due out tomorrow morning. Now, we mentioned this briefly on Tuesday. A closely watched housing market barometer shows that home prices in November posted their biggest annual gain in more than a year. That's been a little updated since then. The S&P Dow Jones CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index rose over 5% over the 12 months ending in November. And that's the index's fifth straight gain and the biggest since December 2022. Home prices are now up 45% since March 2020, when the pandemic officially began, the early days of it anyway. And a tight supply of homes for sale has kept upward pressure on home prices despite a severe housing market slump deepened by that surge in mortgage rates last fall. In October, according to Freddie Mac, the average rate on the 30-year mortgage reached 7.8%. Others like Bankrate, the Mortgage Bankers Association, actually had them breaking through the 8% barrier. Well, since then, home loan borrowing costs have been mostly easing, though they remain well above the 3% levels we saw just a couple of years ago. Elevated mortgage rates and a dearth of available homes have kept the U.S. housing market mired in a recession the past 2 years. Sales of previously occupied homes sank to a, roughly 30-year low last year, tumbling 19% from 2022. Today, CoreLogic forecasts that U.S. home prices will rise by an average of 3% this year. Many economists are projecting that mortgage rates will continue heading lower, with forecasts generally being around 6% for the end of 2024. And yes, it's Jobless Claims Thursday. Number of Americans applying for initial unemployment benefits at the end of the month rose to a nearly three-month high, 224,000, another sign, some say, of a little softening in what's been an incredibly strong labor market. Initial jobless claims increased by 9,000 in the week ending January 27th from 215,000 the prior week. New jobless claims are starting to become more normal again after the usual fluctuations we see during the holidays, stretching from Thanksgiving really until Martin Luther King Day in mid-January. Now, although they still show a surprisingly resilient labor market that's characterized by low layoffs and low headline unemployment, new claims appear to have drifted a little bit higher in the new year. New jobless claims rose in 29 of the 53 states and territories that report these figures to the Labor Department. The biggest increases were in California, Oregon, and New York. New claims fell slightly in 24 other states. Number of people collecting unemployment benefits throughout the country rose by 70,000 to 1.9 million. That's the highest level since mid-November. A gradual rise in these so-called continuing claims over the past year is a sign it's taking longer for a lot of people to find new jobs. Looking at actual or unadjusted figures, the initial jobless claims might even be weaker than it appears. They totaled 261,000 last week compared to 225,000 the same week a year earlier. Now, claims bear close watching in the next couple of weeks to see if they subside again. A slew of companies, particularly in the tech world, have announced layoffs in the new year, and it remains to be seen how widespread they become. Businesses are hiring at a slower pace compared to last year, but they have been reluctant to lay off workers because of a tight labor and steadily growing economy, although Some will beg to differ with that as our next story report. Companies announced the highest level of job cuts in January since early 2023. A potential trouble spot for a labor market that will be in sharp focus this year among the Fed, Congress, and the White House, and all the political challengers out there. Now, these numbers are according to the latest report from Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. That's the job outplacement firm. It said planned layoffs totaled 82,300 for the month. That's a jump of 136%, more than twice from December, though still down 20% from the same period a year ago. It was the second highest layoff total and the lowest planned hiring level for the month of January, and data going all the way back to 2009. Technology and finance, not surprisingly, the hardest hit sectors, with high-flying Silicon Valley leaders like Microsoft, Alphabet, and PayPal announcing workforce cuts to start the year. And it looks like one of our two canine mascots, My Macy, is trying to greet one of her buddies who looks to be passing by in the neighborhood. So excuse her intonations. Amazon also said it would be cutting, as did UPS, in the biggest month for layoffs since last March. Andrew Challenger, who's senior VP of the firm, said the cuts were driven by broader economic trends and a strategic shift towards increased automation and AI adoption. Aha! Though in most cases, he argues, companies pointed to cost-cutting as the main driver for layoffs. Well, financial sector layoffs totaled 23,200. That was the worst for that sector since September 2018. Tech totaled 15,800. Food announced 6,600, the highest since November 2012. Now, the report follows yesterday's news from ADP that private payrolls increased by just 107,000. For the month. Tomorrow, the Labor Department will be releasing its non-farm payrolls count, which is expected to show growth of about 185,000. And today, EU leaders agreed on a 50 billion euro, that's $54 billion, an aid package for Ukraine. European Council President Charles Michel announced that, overcoming weeks of opposition from member country Hungary. Viktor Orban, Trump's buddy. At the same time, Ukraine's army chief is expected to be dismissed from his post within days. Valery Zaluzhny is popular with the public there, but more problematic for Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky. Amid a rift between the two leaders, Zaluzhny was widely reported to have been called to a meeting at the president's office on Monday and was asked by Zelensky to step down, but he reportedly refused. And now a presidential decree, they say, could be issued by as early as tomorrow to dismiss the commander. The move comes after months of tensions between the officials, particularly after Zaluzhny, who's commander-in-chief of Ukraine's armed forces since July 2021, gave an interview last November where he described the war with Russia as being at a stalemate. That's a characterization that Zelensky has vehemently denied. In other news, Vladimir Putin said yesterday that Ukraine used a U.S.-supplied Patriot air defense system to down a military transport plane in the Belgorod region last week. Putin claims the plane was carrying 65 Ukrainian POWs and 9 Russians. Putin called for an international investigation into the incident. Now, Ukraine has neither denied nor confirmed that it downed the plane and has demanded proof of who was on board. Kyiv also called for an international investigation into the. And that's all the time we have for the first segment today. I hope you'll stick around. Going into a couple of messages, you're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other business today. We're at 1-800-375-4188. Please check out our website, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletters and blogs. Again, dgscoins, one word, .com. Well, FBI Director Chris Wray warned a House committee yesterday that Chinese hackers are preparing to wreak havoc and cause real-world harm to the U.S. Wray told the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, quote, Chinese hackers are positioning an American infrastructure in preparation to wreak havoc and cause real-world harm to American citizens and communities if or when China decides the time has come to strike, end quote. Cyber officials have long sounded the alarm about China's offensive cyber capabilities, but Wray's dramatic public warning highlights the huge level of concern at the top of the government about the threat Chinese hackers pose to critical infrastructure nationwide, if not worldwide. The head of the National Security Agency and other senior government officials also testified on Chinese cyber activity in front of the panel. Wray said Chinese government-backed hackers are targeting things like water treatment plants, electrical infrastructure, and oil and natural gas pipelines. That would be bad, too. He added that Chinese hackers are working to find and prepare to destroy or degrade the civilian critical infrastructure that keeps us safe and prosperous. And he added, let's be clear, cyber threats to our critical infrastructure represent real-world threats to our physical safety. Now, of course, Chinese government officials have previously denied allegations of hacking. The hearing comes in the wake of a big push by U.S. and Chinese officials to ease tensions in their relationship. At a meeting in November, China's President Xi Jinping assured President Biden that China would not interfere in this year's U.S. elections. That assurance was reiterated by the Chinese foreign minister to Biden's national security advisor this past weekend. Well, U.S. officials say they'll be closely watching to see if Xi keeps his word. Asked about that assurance at the House hearing, Gray said, China's promised a lot of things over the years, so I guess I'll believe it when I see it. Jen Easterly, who heads the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agencies, told lawmakers, the truth is the China cyber actors have taken advantage of very basic flaws in our technology. We have made it easy on them. Well, fellas, let's tighten things up. How about it? Bring to a new report from the International Monetary Fund, the U.S. economy grew faster than other major advanced economies did last year and looks poised to do so again this. The details shed light on some underlying strengths of the U.S. economy and some say reflect the good policy choices along with good luck. Strong GDP growth in 2023 was driven by a combination of growth in both the labor force and productivity, as Melody and I have previously talked about. But that's essentially a redundant statement. I mean, the open question is why the U.S. has both more people working and delivered more economic output for each hour worked. A significant part of the gain can be explained simply by there being more workers. Right now, the U.S. labor force has expanded by 2.5 million people over the course of last year, reflecting both immigration, I'm just talking about legal immigration, and native-born Americans joining the workforce. Adam Posen, who is president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, argues that another important part of the story is a massive shift during the pandemic and its aftermath when American workers shifted en masse toward higher wage, higher productivity work. On the other side of the big pond, Europe and Japan remain tied to their pre-COVID jobs. As government policies there incentivize keeping people in existing payrolls rather than offsetting lost income with better unemployment benefits and even cash payments. But this wasn't due to any grand design. I mean, Posen said this was plain good luck, since the massive U.S. churn of people through unemployment and renegotiating job terms was the result of our politics and institutions, not of deliberate design. Now, Skanda Amarnath of Employ America argues that strong 2023 U.S. productivity gains reflect federal investment in manufacturing capacity. It's a view also advanced, not surprisingly, by the Biden White House. It also helps account for the superior growth results, some say, in the U.S. versus the rest of the G7, which showed U.S. GDP growing 2.5% in 2023, followed by Japan at 1.9%, Canada at 1.1%, France at 0.8%, Italy at 0.7%, the U.K. at 0.5%, and Germany at negative 0.3%. Amarnath also emphasizes the benefits of a full employment economy, which may incentivize companies to be more creative and aggressive in finding new ways to make their workers more productive. Now, he flags the possibility of time to train effects, meaning that millions of workers, employers added to their payrolls in 2021 and 2022 may not have hit high levels of productivity until 2023. Well, it looks like Philadelphia's pipeline for converting old office buildings into new apartments is among the hottest in the country. 957 units are expected locally from conversions this year in Philly, according to Rent Cafe's latest annual report on the topic. That's a 136% increase over 2023, the highest percentage increase in the nation. Now, in terms of sheer numbers of conversions, Washington, D.C. leads the way with 5,800 office to residential conversions expected this year, followed by New York City with 5,200, Dallas 3,200, Chicago 2,800, and L.A. with 2,400. And we talked about how converting underused office space is a key part of post-pandemic plans in many big cities to create much-needed housing, whether for young people who've been shut out of the market and or for growing numbers of homeless people. In Philly, there's a high-rise at 1701 Market Street, the former headquarters of the Morgan, Lewis & Bockius law firm. It's one of the city's biggest conversion projects. It will have about 300 apartment units projected to be finished in 2025. Number of new units expected from office to apartment flips nationally is about 55,300. It's a lot. It's more than quadruple what it was in 2021, according to Rent Cafe, but completing these projects will be easier said than done. Well, chief executives think global economic chaos is becoming the new normal. That's according to Cisco chair and CEO Chuck Robbins, who's also the new chair and CEO of the influential Business Roundtable. Robbins, who lives in Atlanta, is now corporate America's ambassador in the nation's capital. He's already gaming out the agenda for either another term of President Biden or a return of former President Trump. Robbins has led the technology giant Cisco for 9 years. It's a role that often puts him in before top Washington policymakers. Now he'll represent a much broader set of interests in those meetings. Robbins said, "You have a group of CEOs that actually expect the next crisis will happen and we just deal with it. We don't overreact too much either way. There's a generation of CEOs," he continues, "with everything going on that probably would have said, we're just going to pause everything until things get back to normal. But now we think this is the new normal." Robbins, who's a numbers guy, who has a math degree and a computer science concentration, said most lawmakers in Washington realize that strong, innovative companies do great things for this country and they want to help. I suspect that most of them certainly want to help. Some of the, I think very few, that's their mission. I mean, I think by and large, I mean, it's all about making money for their shareholders. And hey, if it does good things for a community or the country or world, hey, that's great. Well, whatever the case, Robin says the roundtable's top priorities will shift depending on which administration is in the White House. He believes a second-term Biden administration might mean more focus on industry investment, reminiscent of legislation like the CHIPS Act a few years ago. For a hypothetical second Trump administration, he says restoring Trump-era business tax breaks for R&D and more favorable regulations would be pushed. Robin said comfort with uncertainty may just help keep the economy humming. That's typically good for gold prices, too. He said most CEOs know if they pause investment for any extended length of time, with the rapid evolution of some of these technologies, they can be completely left behind in no time at all. Now, I asked about his leadership style. Robin says, "I am super transparent, a super simple communicator, I don't overcomplicate things. I'm just not smart enough. Well, he also likes fly fishing for bonefish in the Bahamas. That's not too dumb either. I wonder who his agent is. Well, after 4 months of intensive negotiations, the Senate appears on the verge of abandoning a bipartisan southern border security deal that Republicans once demanded as a precondition to new military aid for Ukraine. The bill text hasn't been released yet, as furious negotiations are still playing out, but the toxic realities of election year politics, including an intervention from former President Trump, have pushed the deal to the edge of collapse. House Speaker Mike Johnson has used rumors of the bill's contents to pronounce it dead on arrival, but some Senate Republicans have been holding out hope that the dynamic will change once the text is released. Republican Senator Jim Lankford of Oklahoma, the leading GOP negotiator, said he's been meeting with Republicans one-on-one to clear up misinformation about the bill. He said, "I go back to the most basic principle of an Abraham Lincoln quote that's my favorite. Don't believe everything you read on the internet." Well, got to hand it to him. That's pretty clever. "The rumors that are swirling about what this does and doesn't do are wrong," added Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema, Sinema of Arizona. She's another key legislator who briefed reporters on specific provisions of the bill. And then Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota even suggested that Russian disinformation could be the source of some online messaging against the bill, saying some people would rather not see any more funding for Ukraine. Senate Republicans emerged from a conference lunch yesterday with no consensus on the path forward, other than the urgent need for the bill text to be released. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell seemed to open the door to a standalone funding package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, potentially dropping the GOP's border conditions after months of their being linked. McConnell said there is bipartisan support here in the Senate for both Israel and Ukraine. Hopefully at some point we can get them the support they need. Yeah, not doing so, I think, would be devastating, particularly to Ukraine. What else? Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Senator, said, "I'd still like to move forward on the border deal, but sand's going through the hourglass." Standalone funding for Ukraine would present its own set of hurdles, especially in the House, where Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has threatened to introduce a motion to vacate against Johnson as Speaker if he allows a standalone vote on Ukraine funding, even though the war effort has broad bipartisan support in the House. John Cornyn, a senator from Texas, mused, "Some people said, well, I won't vote for Ukraine if I don't have a border bill. But now some of those same people are saying, I don't like the border proposal." Well, like I was going to say, if Melody had been here, you know, politics isn't the science of doing everything you want. Policymaking, particularly in a political sense, is an art of doing what's possible. And at that, at the crux of that is the notion that compromise is essential. So just as though other bills, like the child tax credit portion of the tax package that's being debated now, doesn't have everything that the Democratic Congress people in particular wanted, it's better than what was there before. So take a small victory and come back for another day. Same, I urge Republicans in Congress to look at it the same way about immigration. It's not everything you want, but this could be the biggest overhaul since, you know, in decades. And you get a little bit now, and, you know, wait for another day to see when the numbers might support you're doing more. That's the way politics works, but there's a reason it's been decades since Congress has made any substantive change to immigration law. The policy is complicated, and the politics are razor sharp, even on presidential election years. Another break coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. You know where to reach us, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, if your channel surfing last night landed you on C-SPAN 1 or 2, you know that House lawmakers passed a $78 billion bipartisan tax package. It's true. It includes a child tax credit expansion that could benefit millions of children in low-income families, according to tax policy experts. If enacted, the bill would expand access to the child tax credit and retroactively boost the funding refundable portion for 2023, even, which could affect taxpayers filing right now. While less generous than the pandemic-era child tax credit, which I believe increased the credit from $2,000 to $3,600 a year, the proposed changes still represent real money for millions of families. Now, the House overwhelmingly approved the bill, 350-something to 70, I believe, but it still needs 60 votes to pass in the Senate amid competing priorities. Chuck Maher, who's vice president for federal tax policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington, said there are real benefits here for 16 million kids in low-income families. This doesn't do everything it needs to be done, but it's definitely an important step in the right direction. The bill would expand the tax credit through 2025 now and lift up to 400,000 children above the poverty line in just the first year. Another 3 million children would be less poor, according to a recent report from the center. Now, if enacted, eligible families could see an average tax cut of about $680 for 2023 taxes. That's according to estimates from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Steve Hamilton, who's an economics professor at George Washington University, said, "We know that the child tax credit is an incredibly effective, well-targeted mechanism for delivering relief to families with children. The child poverty rate precipitously dropped during the 2021 tax credit expansion," he added. And then as soon as that expired, it radically increased. Now, Biden's American Rescue Plan boosted the maximum tax break to $3,000 or $3,600 per kid. I think that depended on their age, up from $2,000 in sent monthly payments to families. As a result, the child poverty rate fell to a historic low of 5.2% in 2021, largely due to the expansion. That's according to a Columbia University research paper. After pandemic relief expired, childhood poverty more than doubled in 2022, jumping to 12.4%, according to the Census Bureau. Now, the Urban Institute says modeling a permanent version of the 2021 child tax credit increase, the report projects higher graduation rates and future earnings for childhood tax credit recipients. Something that should not be underplayed. Just reading something that's just came up. Boy, what a difference a few hours makes. As I just mentioned, the House passed a $78 billion bipartisan package yesterday after days of tension within the GOP. But now a new report shows it's having trouble in the Senate. Now, the deal left House GOP leadership scrambling to appease various factions there about the tax bill, and ultimately passed with the help of a lot of Democrats. In the 11th hour, GOP leadership provided assurances to moderate GOP New Yorkers that a fix for the state and local tax deduction, known as SALT, would see action in the House separately. Conservatives who voted against the measure blasted it for being brought up on under the suspension of House rules, and I think it required a two-thirds vote of approval, and argued it provided tax relief to undocumented immigrants. But that's an allegation that House Ways and Means Chair Jason Smith, who's a Republican, said isn't true. Proponents of the bill by Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden of Oregon and Smith argued it's pro-growth and would provide a substantial win for lawmakers back in their districts. Now, in addition to expanding the child tax credit, it would alter R&D, research and development expensing for businesses to allow, again, for immediate expensing. It would also end the pandemic era employee retention tax credit program and increase the low income housing tax credit as well. Again, the deal made it out of the House. It faces a lot of hurdles now in the upper chamber, as key senators are saying they won't support it in its current form. Senate Majority Whip John Thune said that could be a regular order through the Senate Finance Committee, or maybe there's a way of having an amendment process on the floor. Well, Senator Chuck Grassley, who formerly chaired the Senate Finance Committee, appeared to say the quiet part out loud when he suggested that presidential politics could play a role in the bill's fate. He even told reporters yesterday, passing a tax bill that makes the president look good, i.e. mailing out checks before the election, means he could be reelected, and then we don't extend the 27 tax cuts. Well, the thing is about that, ladies and gentlemen, Grassley, who happened to turn 90 last September, incorrectly characterized the child tax credit provision as a mail check. It isn't. It would just be increased at tax submission time. I think it's maybe time to head to the Iowa pastures, Mr. Grassley. Oh, God, pity poor Elon Musk. Musk, oh, certainly makes too much money as Tesla CEO, but that's not the main reason a Delaware judge voided his unbelievable pay package this week. So look, all you CEOs out there, you can breathe easy. You're often criticized. Outrageous pay packages are probably safe. Now, the ruling from the Delaware Court of Chancery overturned Musk's eye-watering $56 billion compensation package. It's the most ever paid to a public company CEO, according to the ruling, but it won't do much to take the air out of inflated executive compensation, according to legal and comp experts. While his pay is staggering by any measure, Brian Dunn says it was just icing on the cape. He spent 40 years as a compensation consultant and now teaches the subject at Cornell University. The real issue was the Tesla's board's process in signing off in the package. The flawed process leading to the approval of Musk's compensation plan was deeply flawed. That's according to the court's chancellor, Kathleen McCormick, in a 201-page ruling against Musk. She details Musk's chummy ties with board members who approved the pay package, particularly Antonio Gracias, a Musk loyalist, and one of the board's members on its compensation committee's working group on the pay package. McCormick writes of their relationship. Musk and McCormick meet outside of work as frequently as once a month. They've spent the night at each other's homes. They have vacationed together with their respective families, including a trip to illusionist David Copperfield's Bahama Island, a trip to Africa, and a ski trip. They've spent Christmases together. And given the collection of people tasked with negotiating on Tesla's behalf, it is unsurprising that there was no meaningful negotiation over any of the terms of the plan. Now, the lack of board independence might have been okay, but McCormick said the board failed to disclose it to shareholders. Tesla described the compensation committee members as independent in its filing on pay. The court ruling said that was decidedly untrue. That meant shareholders didn't have a clear understanding of the compensation proposal when they voted in favor of it. The Delaware suit was filed by a Tesla shareholder in 2018. Now, it's not unusual for a board to be stocked with CEO friends and loyalists. Though the Tesla board is known to be cozier than most. Among others, Elon's brother Kimball is on the board. And objecting to a CEO's pay isn't the norm. Boards want to keep their guys happy. Dunn says it's rare, very rare, for a comp committee or board to really push back. Shareholders typically have little say in the process, too. Although every company has to put CEO pay to a shareholder vote, that's a process that came out of the Dodd-Frank legislation in 2010, the say on pay votes are not binding. Dunn says it's just window dressing. I know now, as I think without exception now, proxy that my wife and I get for companies that we may own shares in, we automatically vote no on their compensation packages. Whatever they are, whoever it is, they're just paid far too much. In any event, the decision to avoid Musk's pay is likely more about Musk and his extreme behavior. That's John Coffey, a professor at Columbia University Law School. The ruling shows that if you go too far, Delaware will examine the transaction under a microscope and you can fail it. But Coffey doesn't think that the decision will threaten many companies. The Delaware court specializes in hearing business cases from the million-plus companies incorporated in the state, and typically it defers to a board's business judgment in pay matters. This is, in fact, just the second time a case like this has come before the Delaware court. And it's the first time the court has ruled against a CEO pay package. In 2005, the court ruled against Disney shareholders who sued the company over former President Michael Ovitz's severance package, which at the time was viewed as oversized at $140 million. Yeah, I'd say that's a tad oversized. Tesla hasn't commented on the decision yet, but Musk said, never incorporate your company in the state of Delaware. He recommends Texas or Nevada instead, though it's unclear if he'd move Tesla out of the state or if other companies would actually follow his advice. Now, other observers do expect Tesla to appeal to the Delaware Supreme Court, but that the decision there will likely be upheld. Last today, productivity growth. It's a key factor in why inflation has receded so dramatically with very little economic pain overall, certainly hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of working families have been affected. But it's a combination few envisioned. The problem is a productivity bump might be fleeting. It explains in part why Jerome Powell shut down the possibility of an interest rate cut in March. Yes, America appears to be in the midst of a productivity boom that's allowed inflation to keep coming down alongside rapid growth, solid wage gains, and a thriving labor market. Now, if it turns out that the 2023 surge in productivity growth was a one-time thing tied to the bounce back from the pandemic, say, then keeping up inflation progress will require growth to slow down in 2024. Workers in the U.S. are producing more for each hour worked, a phenomenon that continued in the last quarter of 2023. The fourth quarter, labor productivity rose 3.2%, in fact. Third consecutive quarter in which it topped 3%. My guess is that we may shake out and be back where we were, Powell said in yesterday's presser, referring to recent productivity gains, adding, I think we're basically in the throes of getting through the pandemic economy. Now, he was fairly explicit that the Fed won't cut rates probably in March. That gives the Fed certainly more time to assess whether inflation is continuing on a downward path, even if factors boosting productivity fade. At some point, though, supply side factors may not have that much more to give. Supply chains will fully normalize at some point, and worker reentry into the labor force will slow. It's worth noting, though, that this phenomenon has lasted longer than many Fed officials and others have expected. Bottom line, according to RSM Chief Economist Joe Bruzuelas, if sustained, the productivity boom is a potential game changer for the American economy. Big bank economist Claudio Erogian believes that if the productivity boom doesn't last, then the economy is running the risk of overheating once the temporary increase in supply due to the easing of bottlenecks comes to an end. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll just say I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to celebrate Groundhog Day and close out the week. Also be on the look for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good day. Bye-bye.